Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, September 6th, 2019. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and reading. We are back today with Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, after a two-week break for the U.S. Labor Day holiday. Welcome to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So when we last spoke, Andrew, Amazon was much in the publishing news headlines, and our program today is more of the same. Amazon, Amazon, and Amazon. Over the break, six publishers and the Association of American Publishers filed a lawsuit on August 23rd to try to block Amazon from including their works in the Audible Captions program. We've talked about their program on the show in the past, but you should refresh our memories. What is Audible Captions?
Sure, and I'm sure our listeners will remember or have at least heard about the program, but to freshen this up here, Audible's Captions program is a new functionality that's being delivered through Amazon's Audible app. And what it does is it scrolls a few words of an AI-generated transcription of whatever digital audiobook one is listening to through the Audible app, of course. And it does this right on the screen as the audiobook is being narrated. It's literally just a few sentences, a few words of text, actually. And it actually reminds me more of karaoke. And I've actually come to start calling it Audible Karaoke. Seems appropriate. The theory is, on Amazon's part anyway, that being able to see a few words of text as the audiobook is playing will increase comprehension and engagement by the user.
So publishers were definitely spooked by Audible Karaoke, I mean Audible Captions, because the program was showing text, which the publishers argued violated their license agreements with Amazon. Spooked enough, in fact, to file suit. Tell us about that action.
Exactly. So the program is Amazon's program. The captions program is reportedly still set to begin as early as September 10th. But as you note, the Association of American Publishers and a group of plaintiff publishers that includes all of the Big Five plus Chronicle Books filed a copyright suit on August 23rd here in the Southern District of New York, looking for an injunction that would bar Audible from including their works in captions. In a statement at the time of the suit, AAP President and CEO Maria Pallante accused Audible of, and I'm going to quote her here, willfully pushing a product that is unauthorized, interferes with, and competes with established markets. And to translate that, the crux of this case, the copyright case here, boils down to this. The publishers are insisting that this is a market that must be licensed into. They claim that their agreements do not allow for text display, end of story, so that any new program that goes beyond the scope of the agreements, which is to playback audio, even if it's just showing a few words of text at a time generated by a computer, well, that's a negotiated right.
Last week, Andrew, you were first to report in PW what you called a minor victory for the publishers. Audible agreed to exclude the plaintiff publisher's works while the case is being resolved. So why a minor victory?
Yeah, that's right. You know, this stipulation was filed as part of a scheduling order. And in that stipulation, Audible did agree to exclude the publisher's works from the captions launch. So it's a minor victory because it's keeping the publisher's works out of the launch, which was the point of seeking an injunction ahead of the launch. Now, a major victory, I suppose, would be winning the injunction, you know, winning the case on the merits. And it's worth noting that the captions program still may very well launch in a week or so with works for which there is no copyright or rights issues. And that would include public domain books or Amazon published works. And I'll just take a moment to go back to my initial observation here that I made back in July when we first talked about the captions program. And that's that I believe Audible really had no intention of including the publisher's works in the initial launch, and their willingness to agree to this stipulation sort of bolsters that belief. And I also believe that, well, they kind of goaded publishers into filing this suit.
Okay, well, now the fun part, Andrew. I get to ask you your personal take on all of this. Open up your reporter's notebook for us just a bit and tell us, what are you hearing and what do you make of all of it?
Yeah, so I agree. This is the fun part. And you know, I'll start by repeating the question that I raised when news of this program, the captions program, first appeared in a USA Today exclusive back in July. When has Amazon ever rolled out a product based on a fair use argument. It's really just not their style. Amazon is not Google here. And if you look at all their statements to the major publishers, after Audible showed the publishers a demo of the captions program, they've all been really circumspect. For example, will the program include our titles? The publishers asked. The program will include all titles within our parameters, Audible replied. Can publishers and authors opt out? No opt-outs. But then again, why would Amazon let anyone opt out of a program that they think is legal and would help sell books and is part of their contracts? You know, what would you expect Audible to say in that regard?
Okay, then so why would Audible goad publishers into a lawsuit? What's to be gained?
Well, again, when has Amazon ever rolled out a program based on fair use? That's still key, I think, to understanding this suit here. And I think it's worth noting that the captions program, which I have to say is pretty quirky and adds questionable value, is now getting a ton of coverage in the press. But I don't mean to suggest that it's just publicity that Amazon is after here. More, I think it's leverage. Whatever the merits of this copyright case, this is Amazon. And the final word on this program is going to come, I believe, at the negotiating table. And the way things are situated now, with this suit being filed, Amazon is going to roll out the captions program on all these public domain titles and all these indie titles while painting the major publishers as anti-innovation when a number of Amazon customers wonder why they can't use this caption service on those books. I think they may have just succeeded in putting publishers in a corner of sorts. And when this program eventually winds up on the table in the publisher's terms of sale negotiations with Amazon, which I believe it inevitably will, Amazon negotiators are going to then start trotting out their data, which I'm guessing is going to show that, hey, this captions program actually boosts sales and boosts engagement of audiobooks, at which point Amazon will start to pressure the major publishers to participate because, hey, everyone's going to make more money. Look, our data shows it. And of course, for the privilege of using Audible's technology, instead of, you know, paying a licensing fee to publishers, Amazon's going to say, hey, why don't you guys pay us a few more points here? So I think the court case is interesting, but again, the big thing here is that this is Amazon. So to me, I fundamentally view this as a negotiation.
Okay, that's true enough, unless, of course, the publishers win their case. What do you think of the chances that the publishers will win?
Well, I think this is a fascinating case, and I do take the publisher's point here that the program on its face seems to go beyond what is stipulated in their contracts, not having seen the contracts, only hearing from what the publishers and authors are saying here. But then again, the publishers have made the same argument a few times now, you know, and that's argument being that this new digital market has to be licensed into. There's two major copyright cases that spring to mind, which publishers have filed and lost. They argued that in the search market, that must be licensed into as well in the Google case, and they lost overwhelmingly there. They also argued that the court should look at e-reserves holistically in the Georgia State case as a market, and not as individual copyright instances. They lost that case as well. At least they lost it for now. That case is still winding through on appeal. Now, here's where I think the publisher's case is vulnerable. One, Audible isn't making any copies. The program in question, rather, is a tool that the user applies. So the text that is transcribed by the AI tool, it's ephemeral, right? It's just a few words at a time. It isn't stored. It doesn't make a copy. You can't scroll the text ahead or back. And I think it's going to be pretty hard to argue, though some people have, that the few words of karaoke that are displaying on the audiobook there are a substitute for an ebook. Now, we'll see if that argument is going to be made. And I think also what's going to come into play here is the agreements. And the agreements may say very clearly, no text rights. But again, this is a tool and fair use is still a defense here. And I don't think the publishers actually can win here because Amazon has so many ways not to lose. The case is easily settled at any point simply by excluding the publisher's works, right? No copyright infringement if there's no examples of infringement here. So if the publishers never include, or excuse me, if Amazon never includes the publisher's work here, where's the harm? Where's the case? So I think, you know, that the risk here, now that Amazon has excluded the publishers from the case as the case rolls forward, it makes it very low risk for Amazon.
Well, you've poked some holes in the publisher's case, potential case at least, but tell us where you think the publisher's case is strongest.
Well, I think it's strongest in that Amazon has already shown that it has designs on a market here. It already allows users who own both a narrated audible audiobook and an ebook to put the two together and have the book sort of show the text and read along. But again, there are some differences between those two programs. The program that allows people to utilize their audio and ebook copies and this AI program. And I'll spare you the details of that here. It would be, you know, too many to enumerate here. But nevertheless, I do think that's telling. And where I really see the case strongest for the publishers, if the publishers really make this case, is as an anti-circumvention case. In other words, the AI program, the way it's used here, offers people a way around the DRM that keeps the ebook text protected. In other words, Amazon's using AI as a way to transcribe an audiobook. And I think that's an interesting question for the courts to explore. Audible is essentially handing users a proverbial crowbar. Now, is that crowbar a tool that's being used to open a box of legal enhancements? Or is it an instrument that's being used to bash in a window and steal a right? But again, I'm going to go back to my key point here, which is this is Amazon. And I remain skeptical that these major business partners are going to fight on the basis of what essentially is an academic fair use case. This is about business. And there are many ways out of this litigation for Amazon. So I'd be surprised if this ever gets to a judge. But hey, you never know. There's a hearing set for September 25th, and we'll stay tuned.
At the very least, this latest skirmish is another reminder of Amazon's dominant position and strength in the trade book market. And as if we needed it, we saw still another reminder of that, this time involving Margaret Atwood, author of The Handmaid's Tale.
That's right. This weekend, we've been hearing for months now, and those of us who were at the London Book Fair will recall the promotion that was taking place there for Margaret Atwood's highly anticipated new novel, The Testaments. The book is under embargo in anticipation of a one-day laydown on September 10th. But oops, guess who shipped the book early? Amazon. Now, here's the question. Is that an oops? Or is that a gentle reminder of just how much power really Amazon has in the market? Because what is the publisher, even though it's a huge publisher, Penguin Random House, what are they going to really do here? You know, confirming the breach, Doubleday's executive director of publicity, Todd Doty, said that a very small number of copies were released and that the issue has been rectified. Indie booksellers, however, are not buying that. They're angry. And as my colleague Claire Kirk reports this week, this stuff happens, right? You see embargoes broken all the time. But in this case, that it's Amazon really raises the question as to whether even a publisher as big as Penguin Random House is the master of its domain. If Amazon, its largest partner and a giant in the industry, decides to, or even accidentally, has other ideas about when a book should ship.
Well, it's not an accident that we turn to Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer for news and analysis on the publishing industry every Friday here on Beyond the Book. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming next on Beyond the Book, online access, competing digital formats, and open access publishing models have all contributed to the sales crash of print editions of academic monographs. But publishers, researchers, universities, and funders aren't ready yet to give up on a favorite form. Any effort to save scholarly monograph publishing will rely on usage data, though that data remains hard to come by. With a grant from the Andrew Mellon Foundation, the Book Industry Study Group, and several other collaborators, has undertaken a review of factors holding back adoption of ebook monographs. The conclusion, according to BISG Executive Director Brian O'Leary, is that data on users and usage of such works is necessary to justify not only publishing programs, but also related research activities.
The challenge is in part that there are different methodologies, and so the information needs to be in some way normalized as well, that not everybody's collecting information on every book. So there are gaps in the information, and finding a way to bring people together to figure out how to do it better was part of the goal of the project that we were part of.
Finding a path forward for open access books. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.